from KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Later today, President Donald Trump is expected to unveil a set of proposals that the White House claims will help workers and businesses taking a financial hit from the spread of coronavirus. Consumer spending is down as Americans shop less, eat out less, travel less, and go to work less as doctors advise people to avoid public areas. Yesterday, the stock market hit its lowest point since 2008, but rebounded somewhat this morning. Those incidents, along with a steep drop in oil prices, are now fueling fears that the United States is headed for a recession. A downturn now would come after nearly a decade of growth, marking one of the longest economic recoveries in U.S. history. Meanwhile, Trump and other lawmakers are considering cutting payroll taxes or offering cash assistance to help workers and companies most affected by the coronavirus scare. But where will the funding come from? Will those measures be enough to ward off long-term economic decline? And what does volatility in the stock market tell us, if anything, about the health of the economy? We're going to unpack what's driving the fear of an impending recession. Joining us is Heather Long, economics correspondent with The Washington Post. And welcome, Heather Long. Heather Long, do we have you?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Wasn't sure there for a moment. Stephen Levy is also joining us in this segment. And Stephen Levy directs the Center for Continuing Study of the California Economy. Stephen Levy, welcome.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning to you. And let me begin, if I may, Heather Long, with you. And let's begin by talking about what we know. There's a lot that we don't know about what the president and this administration is putting forward.
Well, the good news is the president seems to be on board with doing something that was in doubt over the weekend. But after his press conference Monday evening, which surprised even some of his aides, he really opened the door to doing a big package. And to his he mentioned specifically a payroll tax cut, so that idea that we wouldn't have to pay Social Security and Medicare taxes for a few weeks or months. There was also mentioned doing something for, he didn't specify exactly what, but trying to help lower income workers who might be affected, particularly in restaurant sectors and tourism sectors. If they're not working, they're not getting paid. So ideas that Democrats are very keen on are to beef up unemployment insurance and to enact some sort of sick pay across the country. Some other ideas that have come up, the big, big elephant in the room is there going to be a bailout? And last night, the president, and this morning, he sort of dances around this. He says that they are in constant contact with the airlines and with the cruise lines and with the hotel industry, which, of course, he knows a bit about. But whether or not they are actually going to provide cash or a tax break to those industries is probably one of the most hotly debated things going on the Hill right now.
Well, the market seems to be turning up and down and up and down. Today it went up a little bit, but then it went down again. And there is a concern about stocks going down, about bonds going down. They fell below 1%. That never happened before. About oil because of the fight that's going on with the Saudis and the Russians. The fact of the matter is many feel we're on the brink of recession here. Your thoughts?
The stock market is clearly indicating fear of a global recession, so not just in the U.S., but worldwide. That said, things can change very rapidly. I think it's notable that we have not hit a 20% down, a bear market yet. That we came very, very close yesterday when the market was down. The Dow, for instance, was down 19.3% from its all-time high, which was hit in mid-February. And it sounds kind of technical, but if you hit that bear market, that 20% drop, it's a psychological factor for Wall Street and for many investors across the country. It would mark the end of 11 years of an upswing in the stock market. That would be gone suddenly. And so I think we haven't quite hit that, but the fact that we're close is certainly tells you how high fears are right now. The big thing, and I wrote this in the Washington Post yesterday, of course, everybody's watching the stock market glued to all that, but the underlying economic concerns are you're worried about individual Americans who might not be able to pay their bills if they aren't getting enough hours and pay in the coming weeks, and you're worried about companies, both small and large, potentially defaulting on their payments and going bankrupt. And so far we haven't seen that in a widespread capacity yet, but you are certainly seeing red flares go up. We've got some layoffs in Los Angeles ports already, and we've certainly got some debt of some companies that's looking very, you know, the people keep bidding it down and down and down, an indication that people don't think some of these companies are going to make it.
Again, we're talking with Heather Long, economics correspondent for The Washington Post, and there are a huge number of personal and business defaults, a major threat to the economy. There are many other threats to this economy. Let's talk to Stephen Levy, who is director of the Center for Continuing Studies. Continuing study for the California economy, you know, Steve Mnuchin, the Secretary of the Treasury, Steve Levy, said the economy is basically strong. We're in a public health crisis, but the structure of the economy is strong. What about here in California? I mean, first of all, is the Secretary of Treasury, in your judgment, right about that? And is our structure still basically strong?
Well, let's start with the basics. The California economy is going to take a hit in the short term. Job growth will be either slower or negative, and unemployment will rise. We'll probably get hit harder than the nation because we have greater exposure to travel and tourism and trade, where the major impacts of the virus are. And the unfortunate part is that the impacts are probably disproportionately on low and middle income people who can't stay home from work. They work in retail, they work in logistics, they deliver the packages, they provide health care, in-home care, they work at hotels or airports or ports. And so the negative impacts aren't going to be distributed equally. The tech workers can stay at home. And this comes on the heels of some negatives that California is struggling with anyhow, which are high housing costs and the negative effects of the administration's trade and immigration policies. Having said that, this isn't 2008 with massive foreclosures in a banking system at risk. And the magnitude of the losses, whether we go into a recession, is going to depend on how long it takes to contain the virus and get things back to normal. So certainly temporary help, as Heather suggested, the enhanced unemployment insurance, which is targeting people who get unemployed, or paid sick leave so that people who are at risk don't go into work and infect other people, are the things that come to my mind.
The other thing that comes to my mind is panic, which can certainly affect things. And I'm going to ask you, Stephen Levy, about how the consumers figure into all this. I mean, there's certainly going to be layoffs and hiring freezes, loss of pay, fear of loss of income. All that seems to be affecting consumer spending, has to affect consumer spending. We don't know how long the virus is going to last. Could change with the season. One could be hopeful about it. But 40% of Americans have trouble paying bills, had trouble paying their bills before this hit.
Right. That's why I, and as Heather said, many Democrats favor immediate enhanced cash payments to either people who get unemployed and need income to maintain their spending there, and to people who are sick and can't go into work but might go into work because that's the only way they can feed their family. I would help the people whose consumer spending is directly affected by the virus. People, tech workers who work at home and are getting full pay, I think don't need our help as a priority over people who are getting laid off or are sick.
We're talking about the spread of the novel coronavirus sparking recession fears and the effect on the economy. And if you'd like to join us, we welcome your calls. If you have questions or comments, you can join us now. Are you concerned about a recession? And if you have those concerns, tell us what they are. You can give us a call at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786 is the number for your calls. Again, that number is 866-733-6786. Or get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions to forum@kqed.org. Listener tweets, events being canceled equals contractors working on hourly wages, catering, AV, tech performers will have no income. And this gets back to the question of what the administration can do, especially in light of the fact that there seems to be some dissonance, Heather Long, between what Republicans are proposing and what Democrats are proposing. Democrats have talked about, well, much more in the way of spending, as is usually the case. But where is this money going to come from to begin with? We've got a terrible deficit now.
Well, as we all know, Washington never has problems spending money when there's a will. And there's a lot of demand right now for that to happen. So I don't think anyone's going to be looking at the debt clock and say, gee, we can't spend this money because we already have so much outstanding
debt. No, I think you're absolutely right about that. But I'm just wondering, like, for example, they're proposing $1 billion in emergency funds to Small Business Administration to make loans to struggling companies, and talking about other things that have gone down the pike. More might be needed. But the fact of the matter is, as we get into this coronavirus recession, if indeed there is a recession, we're going to have more and more problems just in terms of liquidity.
Yeah, that's right. There's just so many different moving parts to what is going on. You know, a couple of weeks, even just a week ago, we were all focused on, hey, these ships that aren't coming from China, and we've got all these supply issues where, you know, factories might have to close if they can't get that one part that's needed to make a car or whatnot. That's quickly been turned into this demand problem we're all worried about, where people literally aren't leaving their homes, so they're not going out and spending money and doing their normal daily routine, and that's having that ripple effect on a lot of the lower income workers that Stephen was talking about, who work in restaurants, who work at Disney World, who work at these different places that are on the front lines of the service industry and economy. But there's this third problem that's been layered on top of all this week, and I think it heightened fears in the market and the broader economy, and that is we now have, on top of all this, an oil price war going on that's why you saw oil prices take that precipitous fall Sunday into Monday. They fell 30%, the most since the 1991 Gulf War. It's great for people who drive that we're going to have a couple of weeks here of really cheap prices at the pump. But it's not great for America's energy industry. Most companies in the United States simply cannot survive if oil stays at $30 a barrel. And so I think for Washington policymakers, the list of problems is just growing really quickly. And it's this question of who do you help first? How much help do you give to whom? How do you prioritize this list? Obviously, the Democrats are saying we must help the less affluent people first and foremost, and the healthcare sector. Republicans are a lot more interested in a tax cut, which would probably have the most boost to the middle class. And then there's this big question of which industries do you bail out? On top of that is what you were hinting at. We are starting to see the financial plumbing, if you will. So banks are warning of these liquidity issues, which literally means that they're starting to see some problems that are similar to 2008, where money is just not moving around as much as they would like. And that's another alarming issue. I will say I'm less worried about that simply because the 2008 playbook works for those problems. We know how to deal with those problems. What we don't have as much experience with dealing with is how do you make people feel safe enough to leave their homes?
Yeah, I should mention that Speaker Pelosi and Minority Leader, Schumer, on Sunday laid out a list of priorities. Sunday night, more unemployment insurance, food stamps, school lunch programs, essentially whether that's going to come into a problem with what the GOP is putting forward remains to be seen. But Steve Levy, before we get to our callers here, let's just talk with you about the fact that you can't necessarily seem to be let me put it this way, the White House and the Fed are at odds big time, aren't they?
Right. If you make this political, Michael, we're completely sunk. If you ask an economist what to do, I forgot one thing. Immediately reduce tariffs and stop all of the trade wars. Okay? It probably won't happen, But if you're talking about keeping the world economy afloat, the trade barriers and the tariffs are a big hit already. Not political, but I agree with the Democrats on this one. Right now, you help the people who are hurt, the people who can't go to work because they're sick and don't have income, people who get laid off. The other things are prospective. There hasn't been a wave of bankruptcies. There haven't been banks failing. If that happens, we'll deal with that. But deal with the people who are being hurt right now, because we don't know how long it's going. And I would pour extra money into the healthcare sector. I watch on television their localities and states that don't have enough money to do all of the things. I don't know whether the $8 billion is enough. I suspect a lot more. The sooner we stop the spread of the virus, the sooner things go back to normal. So I would do first things first.
Let me read some comments before I go to your calls. Sarah writes, it seems to me that what we really need is an economic pause for everything. No rent collection, no loan payments, no bankruptcies allowed for the next month or so. All workers get paid their wages regardless of whether they are sick. The government keeps anyone who is having trouble staying solvent afloat. That would help. More tax cuts will do nothing. And Hugh writes, please stop spreading fear. The stock market is a reflection of what might happen. It is not the economy. Kelly writes, I haven't done one huge shopping run to stock up in case we're quarantined for coronavirus, but have picked up extras of everything each time I go shopping just in case, and I realize that the less well-off don't have the ability to buy just a little extra. So many people don't have that flexibility. And again, to remind you, in the hour ahead, we're going to talk about those low-income people who are expected to be hit hardest by the effects of the coronavirus. Let me go to your calls now, though, and let's begin with Lisa. Lisa, join us, please.
Hey, Michael. So I am a owner of a live event production company based in Sausalito, and all of our events have been canceled from now until June. A few have pivoted to virtual events, but it's much smaller crews for that. No one's talking about the economic impact of all the freelancers out there who are out of work, who aren't going to be able to go on unemployment, who have to pay high individual health insurance premiums, all of the IOTC workers out there who've been wiped out of work in the Bay Area for the next few months. It's devastating to our teams. It's devastating to our business, and no one is talking about it.
Well, let's talk about it. And Steve Levy, let's have you go on record on this, if you would.
It's a real problem for workers who aren't covered by unemployment insurance. I don't know the mechanics of how to get them the money. As the caller said, they are every bit as deserving as people who are unemployed and covered by unemployment insurance. I just don't have the means to figure out how to do that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Heather Long, you want to add something here?
No. Yeah, so as of yesterday, these giant corporations who normally hire us, our clients, and our clients are in the middle of it, the people that we deal with on a daily basis, who we love and are part of our teams, but their corporate lawyers, the in-house attorneys, are sending the production companies letters claiming force majeure and saying they're not going to pay us for work already done to date.
Well, let me thank Lisa for her call. The other problem with many of these independent workers is, of course, they don't have health insurance, and we'll explore that in the next hour, major problem. But let me get to some more of your calls. Emily, join us. You're on the air.
Radio in just a second. So just so you know what's going on.
Do we have Emily here? I don't know what's going on.
Okay. That's okay.
All right. She's talking. Yeah, Emily, are you there? You seem to be in conversation with somebody else. Be in conversation with us, please. Go ahead.
Oh, yes, of course. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to point out that the gig economy is also seeing a big hit on this. We have very little demand lately in San Francisco for any of the Uber and Lyft drivers taking people to and from.
Yeah, let's talk about the gig economy. Thanks for bringing that up, Emily. Heather Long, let me go to you on this. Great concern there, understandably.
Huge concern. What's interesting is one of the proposals that was in the mix, certainly floated by economists in the last few days, is to literally send every American household a check for, say, $500, $300. That's what happened after 9/11.
That's what Andrew Yang was proposing during the presidential debate.
His is an ongoing, but we saw this before after 9/11 when the Bush administration just wanted to get money into everyone's hands quickly in the hopes they would spend it. Now, there's debate over how many people spent it versus saved it. But the problem for gig workers is all these other solutions that people are talking about, unemployment benefits or even a payroll tax cut. That is only effective if you're getting hours, you know, and you're actually able to work. That's helping you. Whereas that doesn't cover the gig economy. So I would say I'm a little concerned that I don't hear much that could help that population in the current congressional and White House discussions.
Well, speaking about money getting into hands, Robert writes, one unforeseen effect to the economy could be the spread of the virus through paper money exchanging hands. If this proves to be a problem, it would disproportionately affect low-income families that don't have access to banks. Let me bring another caller on here, and that's William. Good morning.
Yes, thank you very much. I would appreciate one of the guests opining on the difficulties, particularly for the undocumented, because with the administration's current anti-immigrant policy, they may be afraid to go to see the doctor, particularly to get a test, and then when the results will be sent to them, they may not want to give their actual address. This could have a very detrimental effect, it seems to me, in spreading the coronavirus among the economically disadvantaged undocumented people. I'd appreciate the guest perspective on
that. I think this is a real concern. Stephen Levy, you want to address it?
That's a hell of a good point. We really want to stop the spread of the virus. And whether that's paying people who are sick to stay home, yes, the unauthorized population, there could be a lot of fear, as there is with the census, that if you show yourself up for care or for anything, you're at risk for being deported. I don't know the solution to that, but the caller is absolutely right. People who are in danger need to see a doctor and need to get tested, and the unauthorized may be afraid to do that. That's a very good point.
It is indeed, and let me thank William for bringing that up. Ron writes, tech will boom in part because tech will provide alternatives to commuting and travel. Let me get another caller on. Stan, join us. You're on the air.
Good morning. Yeah, I'm a bankruptcy lawyer, and I want to comment on the bankruptcy filings. The commentator said that there has not been a wave of filings. Look, you know, if you think of the baseline of 2008, 2009, 2010, and I was practicing bankruptcy law then, there was a lot of filings, but a lot of them were frivolous, like four or fifth time repeat filers filing frivolous bankruptcy to stop a foreclosure. Hello?
Yeah, we're hearing you. Go ahead.
Hello?
He lost us. We didn't lose him, but.
Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
All right, so. Yeah. So, but if you filter out those very frivolous filings that were filed from 2008 to 2012, if you adjust the baseline. And to my knowledge, there's no metric that does it. But if you could, bankruptcy filings are down, but they're not down that much. There's still a lot of bankruptcy filings going on. There's a lot of people who are still hurting. Just want to give you that share that thought with you.
All right. Thank you for the sharing of the thought, and we'll get right to another caller, and that's Carmen. Join us. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to comment on substitute teachers are part of the gig economy, and if they don't work, they don't get paid, and plus they fuel the school districts in the state because a lot of times teachers quit and they put a substitute in there. Also, I want to make a comment. We've gotten too addicted to plastic. Like, I'm from the old days where if you wanted something, you put it on layaway and you made payments. And I was working with a teacher who was $80,000 in debt because he had two MasterCards, two Visa, a carte blanche in American Express. So now he's still working as a sub, even though he's retired, to pay off that $80,000 in debt. So I'd like to end this by, I'm not going to say the whole point, but there was a poet named Keith Patchen who said, stop and begin again. And we all need to stop.
All right. I thank you, Carmen, for that call. We'll let it stand. And let me go to a comment from a listener named Robert, and I'm going to go to you with this, Heather Long. Robert writes, no, we don't want a payroll tax cut. Such a strategy takes money from working people's Social Security retirement savings, undermines the overall viability of the Social Security Trust Fund. Use money instead from reducing the bloated military budget, which ostensibly is for our national security. Here's an opportunity to use it in the face of an actual threat to national security. Well, we're in the political realm there again, and I don't know if there's going to be cuts in defense or military budgets. But Heather Long, caller raises an interesting point. It's going to come out of Social Security as payroll tax.
Yeah, at the end of the day, that's certainly what's going on. There's cost to everything that's happening here and all of these potential ideas that are on the table. I think the hope is that it would be a short-term taking of money. So let's say giving people a couple of months where they're not paying into the Social Security trust fund. So your hope is that this isn't going to be the thing that ultimately would potentially bankrupt Social Security down the line. But there would definitely be an economic hit. I think what I'm hearing from all of these callers reminds me that of Stephen's great point that we get asked a lot, is this like 2008? And I would say the fundamental difference between today versus 2008 is, you know, 2008, the problem and the crisis really started on Wall Street and then spread across the country. Today, it's almost the reverse. The deepest pain is being felt on Main Street first. You know, people literally not leaving their homes, these gig workers, substitute teachers, restaurant workers on the front lines of a lot of this. And that's where the pain is really the deepest, and it is starting first. So it's a very different playbook that you need to address these problems than what we saw in 08, and it's a different way that the pain is spreading.
Well, we've coming up to the end of this hour, and as long as we're talking about pain here, Stephen Levy, what about the supply chains? I mean, there's been a lot of pain associated with supply chains breaking down. What do you foresee?
Yes, I think that's a problem. But let me end with one comment. We need to stay focused. Here, this is not a time to solve every grievance that callers or every political party has had forever. We need to spend money to stop the virus. We need to spend money to help people who are out of work or would have to go into work when they're sick. We need to take care of what we can do in the next 2 months.
Steve, forgive me. I'm going to have to come in here because we're at the end of the hour, and we're going to talk about low-income people and what they can expect as they're going to be probably hit hardest by this. That's the hour ahead. Thanks to Steve Levy of the Center for Continuing Study for the California Economy, and thanks to Heather Long from The Washington Post, and thanks to you, our listeners. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.